In the year 2012, the Earth was attacked by an extraterrestrial military force, destroying 98% of all living creatures. 84 years later, humans studied fragments of abandoned alien spacecrafts and gained the ability to travel through time. In order to prevent the devastating attack of 2012, the humans sent back 4 protectors with a mission to defend the Earth at any cost. Together, these 4 protectors formed Z-Games, the most powerful force that the Earth has ever known. Now, Z-Games is all that stands between us and the impending invasion. Long live the planet Earth. Long live Z-Games.
Good evening, handsome listeners. You are listening to Zed Games, once again Australia's premier video game radio program that's on right now. We are coming to you live from a blasted shack in the middle of a post-apocalyptic wasteland. Sitting across from me, using his turret to defeat his enemies whilst he hides in the corner, Mr. Razor.
We're all gonna die!
That does sound like you. Relying on his latent telekinetic powers to hold his foes in place, Mr. Jody.
Fortitude Valley is a post-apocalyptic wasteland. I think that's the most accurate you've ever been.
This also is a blasted-out shack. I think that's even more apt. The angry midget dual-wielding her machine guns. Candy Payne, the gunzerker.
I'm not a midget. Hi, kids.
That was wildly inaccurate of me. And I am Lee, and I am skulking around the shadows, waiting to stab someone. Anyone. At all. What are we talking about tonight, Ray?
Tonight we have Anthony and Meg from Screwtape Studios joining us live in the studio. They're about to launch a new title, so we'll be talking to them later. And as well as that, Borderlands 2. Lee.
Yay, Borderlands 2.
You love that game.
It's pretty good.
But we'll be right back with the news after this track. Hey guys, this is Zed Games, and let's get into this week's news.
Alrighty, hackers have used an exploit in popular MMO World of Warcraft to go on a mass killing spree in-game. On the weekend, the towns of Stormwind and Orgrimmar were littered with the bodies of dead players and NPCs. A number of players had found the exploit that allowed a level 1 character to instantly kill any character in the game without attacking. The exploit has since been patched, and World of Warcraft creator Blizzard has assured players that the event is not repeatable. There's some amazing videos of that on YouTube. You should check it out. Millions of orcs died to bring us this information.
A Democrat Senate candidate in the U.S. state of Maine has been criticized by the Republican Party for playing World of Warcraft. A smear campaign was launched focusing on Colleen Lakowitz's gaming habits, accusing her of living a double life and quoting anti-Republican messages that Lakowitz wrote on the World of Warcraft forums. She's an orc assassin, which is amazing, and yeah. She's also leveling an undead warlock, which makes me like her even more.
Yeah, she's got my vote.
Yeah. I've got nothing but respect for her. EA has long been accused of recycling content for their sports games, but now they have come under fire for releasing the exact same game 2 years in a row. Nintendo Gamer has found that the Wii version of FIFA 13 is almost identical in every aspect to last year's FIFA 12. When questioned, an EA spokesperson confirmed that there were no new features in FIFA 13 for the Wii, but noted that it had the same great gameplay. Shame. 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 That is pretty shocking.
Wow.
Hasn't it happened on the PS2 before?
Yeah.
Oh.
But it's got a new box.
It's got a new box. No, it's got a new soundtrack. That is actually the only thing that's different. There's
and
a whole
I saw
set
the
of
screenshots.
New
the logo's totally moved. It's like way higher on the screen.
See?
Oh, well, it's not totally identical
that's
then, is
practically
it?
Practically like, a different game.
Well, really it is. You know, you're listening to different music, but it is. It's the same character modes. It's all the same.
Shocking.
Shame.
Analysts have estimated the value of Zynga's games business is zero. The company's combined cash, securities, and real estate assets have been valued at roughly $2.56 a share.
46.
46. Don't talk it up, man.
$2.46 a share. But the company's stock is currently trading below that price. Effectively, what this means is that the ethereal aspects that come with the company, like its intellectual property and its output, are devaluing the buildings that house them. This evaluation comes amid further staff departures from the Casual Games company, with brothers Paul and David Bettner, who are the developers of Words of Friends, they're the latest to leave.
Our hearts go out to the
buildings.
The buildings, yeah, that have to house Zynga.
Rovio has confirmed Angry Birds Star Wars will be released on the 8th of November for iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Mac, and PC.
Jody, this has broken your heart, hasn't it?
Yeah, Windows Phone?
Yeah. Oh.
What were they thinking?
No, this one about Rayman Legends, which is no longer a launch title for the Wii U console. Ubisoft released a statement saying that the game will instead be released in the first quarter of 2013, which I like to say because it sounds more futuristic.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So the Wii U launches in Australia on the 30th of November.
It is a shame because the lineup was diverse, and I think the reason it seemed so diverse was because it had Rayman Legends in it. Rayman Legends is just so weird that you put it alongside anything else and suddenly it looks like you've got a great variety, and then you take that out and suddenly their lineup looks
Ubisoft's other game, Zombie U, is still coming out at launch.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's something.
Yeah.
One of the maps in Activision's popular shooter Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 has been pulled offline due to complaints from Muslim gamers. The complaints were in response to a poster which read, "Allah is beautiful and he loves beauty," being placed above a toilet. Activision have issued an apology statement making it clear that this was not intentional and have taken the map offline while they make changes.
That's pretty observant. Like, to notice that. I mean, I assume, you know, why are you standing in front of the toilet long enough to be able to read what's on a poster? I don't know.
I mean, I believe it could actually be accidental.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I've played the level myself, though.
Yeah, there's so much offensive stuff in Call of Duty that could just slip through quite easily.
that's right.
Yeah, I mean, that dude being stabbed in the throat, that was totally cool by me.
Mm-hmm. Microsoft has released new games content usage rules for games being published by Microsoft Studios. The rules, which would affect the content of games like Halo, Fable, and Age of Empires, prohibit the creators of these games from receiving revenue from outside sources using content from the game. Their YouTube partner program, which allows video creators to monetize their videos, was specifically noted as being prohibited under the new rules.
That seems a bit controlling.
Yeah, it's just because, Halo 4 is coming out very soon, and a lot of revenue is like generated from YouTube
trailer
views
sort
and
of
stuff like
that.
Okay. Yeah. So it's easy to make a whole bunch of money with videos of the game before the game's released.
Yeah. Well, there we go. I had not considered that.
My videos of me dying hilariously in Team Fortress 2 have earned me 75 cents.
Yeah.
Yay.
Really?
No.
No one watches that.
Because you have to own all the content to be a YouTube partner.
Yeah.
You don't own Team Fortress 2 last time I checked.
Those deaths are mine. I earned them.
Technically, those deaths, really they're kills and they belong to someone else. You know.
You can see it that way.
That's right. And Candy, finally?
Yes, last but not least, a little bit of gossip. Naughty Dog, creators of Uncharted 3, have teamed up with America's Next Top Model, College Edition. And they've got all the girls in this competition to wear body sensor suits. And they had to act out scenes. And the point of this is that the models had to use their movements and gestures and different poses to create a taunt. The winner of this competition will, of course, get to be featured in Uncharted 3.
As downloadable content for a game that came out last year.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, well, it's their taunt. That part will now... So, you know, they'll put a little... cheeky pose or something, and then that will get added into the content.
Razor, how much would you pay for this content?
$1,000? If I had $1,000, sure.
Okay.
But I'd more realistically pay...
Nothing?
I don't know, 800 Microsoft points.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Really? You'd pay for it?
Nah, hell no. Are you kidding me? I think it's ridiculous. I think Uncharted 3, they shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting. I don't know
how
why
would you
would
actually
have.
Pay for Uncharted 3 content with Microsoft points?
Oh, yeah. Well, sorry.
It's a system exclusive. You're the worst.
Hey, man, you caught me.
Yeah, that's right. You don't know anything about video games.
Nah.
This whole time.
He's just totally distracted by the models posing right now.
But they're wearing body sensor suits. Isn't that like the most clothing that they've ever worn on the show?
Yeah, but you don't necessarily know what their character in the game is going to be wearing.
Also, they're wearing nothing underneath the suits at all.
Yep. Totally off topic here. The point is, there's downloadable content coming out. There'll be a model in it.
Cool.
Good.
Great.
Hello and welcome back to Zed Games. You just heard Armin Tobin with a song called The Lighthouse from Splinter Cell 3 Chaos Theory. And at the start of the show, you heard Slato with a song called Airports. And now we're about to talk to Anthony and Megan from Screwtape Studios.
Hey guys, welcome to Zed Games.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us, guys.
For inviting us into your own little post-apocalyptic room. I like it.
Yeah. So you guys are from Screwtape Studios. You're a local development company. Can you tell us a bit about how you guys got started and what you dropped to?
Yeah, well, back in the halcyon days of 2010, I was just almost finishing up a degree at QUT. Meg had just been let go from every games company in Brisbane because they shut down.
And, THQ was my final one.
And we thought, well, there isn't any work. I can't afford to go to Toronto at the moment. So let's just start something here. And we started hacking away at our first little iPhone game. And 8 months later, we released it. I don't know if it was very good, but we tried it anyway. We gave it a go, and we've been making games ever since.
Yeah. Cool.
Who's in the company? Just you two, or is there others?
Two permanent members, Meg and myself, and then we have a rotating roster of artists and designers, and because we basically sort of spend a lot of our time on profit share at the moment. People need to go off and get real jobs, or, you know, it can be a bit demanding not having any money. So, you know, we have guys that come in and give us time and then leave.
Yeah, often people come for one game, get a credit under their belt. It's great for them to come in, have that time to be able to work on a game, have a credit. But sticking around on profit share is a tough thing to do. We get that. So we've had some great people come through, but we pretty much, the two of us are the only two that have stuck around from the very beginning.
Yeah. What's it like just taking on, you know, so many hats? You have to obviously do a whole bunch of roles that would normally be handled by many people. What's it like just doing it, both of you?
I love it. I think it's great. It's heaps of experience. You get to sort of see everything. It's never boring. That's probably the point. You're never stuck doing something, and I can jump over and do something else if I need to. So for me, it's, you know, exhilarating.
It is fun. It's stressful at times. I personally am doing a business diploma at the moment as well to pick up my business skills. So putting that on board with the games developing hat is a little bit stressful at the moment, but it's all to make a better company. It's all to do what we want to be doing. So you can't complain too much.
Yeah. Is it hard getting your game out there, like into the public and getting it known?
Expletive, yes. it's the easiest part about games development I've found so far. I could find it really wrong in the future, but right now the hardest part is has been the marketing and the business. The easiest part's making the game. You know, half the time, a third of the time is spent actually developing, and then the rest of the time is marketing and all that extra stuff, just trying to convince people to feature you or show your work or anything. You know, running around the streets, just throwing your phone at people, getting them to play it, or, you know, that's the most difficult part.
Yeah, that does seem to be, particularly in the mobile market that you guys are in, that's the real make or break thing, is if you can get it, you know, in front of a mass group of eyes, then that seems to, you know, you can potentially get that to snowball. But if, you know, you're toiling away, you can be making, you know, really, really great games. If no one's there to actually see it, you know, you don't get the sales.
Yeah, exactly right. If we'd be making a masterpiece, and knowing is it like most masterpieces, no one sees it. Maybe I'll have to kill myself.
Cut an ear off and we'll sell it.
You heard it here first.
So you just put out a game this year. Was it called Bank Job?
Yeah. Yes.
And your first game was released last year.
Conduction, yes, in June.
Yeah, I haven't played Conduction. Can you tell us about it?
I still have a lot of passion for Conduction. It's a small, simple colour match game, but with this idea of electricity, and you can only match the when they're touching because they're all conductors, but you can change the colours. We took a little bit of a spin on the three colour match game. It wasn't the best executed. We must admit, we were working with two programmers and a producer, though, and trying to find artists on the side with no money. But I think for what we had, it was great for who was making it and for our first game, cutting our teeth on it.
Yeah, for us it was a training game, you know, learning how to work with Apple, learning how to, you know, set up devices and learning how to work together, learning how to get people on board and, you know, it's a damn fun game, and everyone should download it immediately from the App Store and from Google Play.
Now, you've had a bit of a success with Bank Job, which was released this year. What did you learn from Conduction that you applied to Bank Job?
You need an artist if you want to make a video game.
Aha! Uh-huh. Everyone write that down.
And you can't spend 8 months on a mobile game that you're not sure isn't going to be released. You spend 4 months and hope for the better. You know, we split our time, the development time, in half between the two projects. We learned that 8 months, we were never going to get our money back, even if we had a small amount of sales. So we pushed Bank Job out a lot quicker, and that for us, I think, really helped.
Yeah, we were under the impression that we spend 8 months making an iPhone game, and then a million people would download it because they did with Angry Birds, right? And then we would never have to make a phone game again, but we do it for fun, you know, for the passion. It's turning out that it's the other way around.
Yeah.
So was the plan to finish the game in 4 months, and then if it was successful, to support it afterwards rather than devoting all that time up front to something that might not catch on?
From now on, that is our plan every time. Yep, get something out there, get something even simple that people can attach themselves to and find fun, and then iterate on that, find where it's fun, you know.
Bank Job did actually find a market eventually in a weird place, didn't it?
We're huge in France.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're still getting a lot of gameplay as well, a lot of sessions played in France, a lot, yeah. And I think it was our wonderful art style. Personally, I think just that classic animation look just picked up people, but it was nothing that we did or that we know we did.
Was it the black and white striped shirt?
I think it was. Yeah.
But then again, there's something about it, because we, just the other day, we were in the top grossing games in Saudi Arabia. So, you know, yeah, I mean, there's something there. We don't have any offensive pictures above toilets. So people really sort of, they resonate with that.
So now you can say that your company is also funded by oil money or something.
Yeah.
There you go. Big oil.
So Bank Job is, for people who haven't played it, it's sort of like the opposite of an endless runner, because you're this criminal and you're breaking out of a bank past all of these traps, but you have to tap the screen to stop rather than to jump or to run or to do any of the things you normally do in a game like Cannibal or something.
Yeah, it's push to stop instead of...
How did you come up with that idea? Because there are a lot of games in a similar genre, but they all work the other way. They're always interact to do something crazy.
We, in our brainstorming sessions, were trying to do something a little bit different. And then just one of the guys, Ben, our artist, he said, what about push to stop? I don't know if he'd been playing around with that thought in his head for a while and decided to let it go and let us mutilate it for him. But, you know, yeah, it was his idea, push to stop. And we went, that's pretty good. No one else is doing it. So let's give it a go.
And we have always, even with our mobile games, in that they are very simple style, we always have tried to do something that a little bit different from the norm. So the push to stop was perfect for that, with that one mechanic. And we also saw so much potential around that one mechanic as well, and not wanting to put too many into a game, it just, the idea of that just, it just flowed the design then after that.
Yeah, I hate mobile games where there's like 100 buttons on the screen and you've got to, you know, mash your fingers around and do something. One button, I reckon, for every button you add to a game, you know, divide your audience by the amount of buttons that are on the screen, because, you know, it's all about accessibility. People are playing this game on the toilet, you know, it's not...
that is actually how I play pretty much all games on my phone.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be working.
Well...
Yeah?
I don't need to go into that on air.
Something I like about Bank Job is the music. It has this jazzy soundtrack, and when you're stopped trying to avoid a bomb that's bouncing past you or whatever, there's like this rising saxophone tone that sort of adds to the tension of it. How do you consider music? Because with mobile games, a lot of people are playing them on the toilet, as you said. They're not really always listening to the music that much. It seems like something a lot of games don't focus on.
It was something where we knew we couldn't use it to inform the gameplay too much because everyone is playing with it on mute, but... you know, sound is a really important part of games, even on phones. So we thought we have to do something a little bit different. And my original idea was, you know, it's this big 1940s sort of Looney Tunes style, and they're all really orchestral. And I wanted harps and things like that playing while you're you know, that sort of random crap in the game. And it turned out to be a little bit prohibitive. technically. So, you know, we go, he's wearing a beret, it's a jazz sort of theme, let's play jazz music. And jazz by its nature is improvisational. So, you know, that leans itself to the gameplay. As long as we got the notes right, as long as it was all in the key, you know, we could do whatever we want with it.
Hold on. Candy, are you playing Bank Job right now?
Yes.
Yay!
So if you haven't played it, Bank Job is available right now on the iOS platform, right? For free?
Yep, it is free. And it's also on Android as well.
Yeah?
Yep.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we luckily got it out on both.
Now, you've got a new project coming up, a new game being released next year. We might ask you about that after this track. Jody, what's this next one?
This next song is called Baby Tea. It's by a Japanese band called Guitar Vader, and it's from the Jet Set Radio soundtrack.
This is Ed Games, and you were just listening to Baby Tea by Guitar Vader, and we are still talking to the very delightful Screwtape Studios, Meg and Anthony. So you guys have got an upcoming game in development, going to be released soon-ish?
Soon-ish, yeah, January, February. Was meant to be November, December, but everyone in the big world of games is releasing their games in November and December, so we thought we may as well give ourselves a bit of a chance in releasing
when
January.
You're competing with EA and Ubisoft again now, because they're all making, you know, mobile games. Mm. They all push between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So we were lucky enough to get some very good advice. That January is probably the best. January, February would be best for us. But
So the game is called Invasion.
It is.
Tell us
Invasion.
A little bit about how you got to the idea of Invasion.
Well, we could sit here for hours talking about the story of Invasion, or you could read the blog post about the story of Invasion on IndieDB. Invasion was that I wanted to, we came up with this crazy idea. We wanted to make this game that featured your mum, and we wanted to do this whole series of games where we put your mum.
Wait, my mum.
Your mum.
Everyone's mum.
It was just, you know, and the first one of these games was your mum, originally your mum in space, and then it evolved into Plan Mum from Outer Space. And we wanted to do these. We put your mum in a mine cart and watch her go crazy, and then you could go customise your
mum. Why would you want to do that to my mother?
Because it's this idea.
Well, you want to do it to your mum.
Because who knows what happens when you go to school and your mum's sitting there at the breakfast, you know, she's cleaning up, you leave. The secret life of your... She's an agent, you know. It was also black and white. It was very...
very artsy. And then we looked at it a little bit deeper and we realised that it was a stupid idea. And
I knew one guy who would love it, because I think everyone has that one friend who still thinks your mum jokes are funny.
Yeah.
And if he could have a game where people could ask him, what are you doing? And he'd be like, I'm playing with your mum. That would make his day.
We sort of...
It's Ray, isn't it?
The joke got old really, really quickly. And then we thought, all right, well, we wanted to make a little space game, you know, inspired by... all the great Space Invaders and Gallagher and everything like that. We wanted to put our own little take on it. But for the modern era, I suppose every little indie game dev wants to do that. So it's probably a rough passage for us to give it a go. And we came up with the idea of Invasion. And instead of the aliens attacking Earth, which is really boring, we have two alien races and they're attacking each other. Yeah.
So what's the core gameplay? What does the player do in the game?
It's a little... thumbstick shooter. Ships are coming up and down across the screen, and you move your crosshair across and shoot them, and then you shoot power ups which help you out. It's some classic gameplay, you know, but it's really fun. I think.
Yeah, so it's still a nice casual game. It's one of our mobile games still, so it'll be really casual. The casual style is best for mobile. Not too many mechanics, not too much, but great look. Great style. Each planet you go to has got a different little alien that you on the planet that you want to not hurt. And so the little aliens are being flung up as well. It's very much the hit something, don't hit something else kind of gameplay, but in a really fun style. And we've got some really great voiceover work that we're working in for tutorials. Once again, trying to play with sound and not completely... blocking that out of a game.
You want to hear the voiceover on Invasion. It's done by a local celebrity.
Yeah, that's all we're allowed to say.
But he wants to remain uncredited, but you'll recognise his voice as soon as you hear it.
Will you at least tell us once we're off air?
Maybe.
Probably.
So what did you learn from Bank Job that you are now applying to Invasion?
if you want to make a video game, you need two artists. No. it's just about getting things done quicker. It's all about speed. It's all about iterating, getting the game in people's hands as quickly as possible. I mean, we've worked on Invasion for over a year, but the last incarnation has sort of only took 3 weeks to get the core gameplay and everything in, and it felt like the rest of the year was just a waste. But it wasn't, because we learned things and we were doing it in our spare time and while we were working on Bank Job as well. And so, yeah, the big lesson is get it out quickly. You're not going to make a masterpiece. You're not going to make this great game that everyone's going to play. Angry Birds was a fluke.
They made 51 games before Angry Birds. So
so you guys have got like 48 left.
Exactly.
And then...
Yeah, well, I always look at, well, we're moving, the intention is we move away from the mobile market. I mean, it's not, mobile games aren't really something that's close to our hearts. So we're already in the process of securing funding for our first PC game.
Ooh. Yes.
When I spoke to you guys earlier in the year, you said that you love story games, narrative-driven games. You'd make like a game like Mass Effect if you could. So is this PC game something closer to that?
This is exactly what it is. Yeah. This is the realization. We, you know, it's we don't make a lot of money from our mobile games, whether that's our fault or the stupid audience's fault. That's,
or if you read Anthony's Life Hacker interview, has something about the app stores like communism work great in theory, not in real life. Finding games on the App Store is just, yeah.
Yeah, we use the mobile games to try to make some money so that we can fund PC development. We haven't made that much money off it. And so, you know, we're looking at other avenues, getting grant funding, and, you know, maybe there's some angel investors out there that want to give us some cash. But we've got some bigger names. You know, Yahtzee's writing the script for us for the game, and he's just, you know, publishing his second book now, which is really, really cool. So we're getting the interest from some really cool people who want to work with us. A couple of industry vets doing art for us, so it's going to look good. And, you know, it's going to be hopefully, you know, witty, fun. It's also a little bit scary, but yeah, really story driven at its heart. And we're just going to try and do something different and challenge the player in a way that we've never been challenged before.
So as indie developers looking at the PC, what do you think of Steam's Greenlight program?
Now that they've got the $100 sort of fee that you got to pay, I think that weeds out a lot of the crap. People putting stuff up there as a joke. I mean, it's good, but all the good indie games are probably going to bypass Greenlight anyway and just go on to Steam, you know? So it's good for awareness building. But, you know, I'd probably do it in line with like a Kickstarter campaign or something like that. That's where Greenlight's really cool. But, yeah, I'm yet to be convinced that it's, you know, an awesome thing.
Cool. Well, Bank Job is available now for iOS and Android. Invasion coming soon, January 2013. Yep. Looking forward to it. But guys, thank you very much for joining us on the show tonight. And where can we find more information about your studio?
www.screwtapestudios.com, or just go to Facebook and like us and you'll get all the updates.
And we also are quite active on Twitter as well, at Screwtape Studio.
Yeah, so definitely check out Bank Job. It is a fun game. Candy's playing it right now. Oh, well, she was before.
I totally was. You can wear funky little hats and things. Yeah, I know hats. That's not the point, but it's awesome.
Hats are always a plus.
Yeah. I just got squashed by a giant anchor.
Cool. Well, thank you. Thanks again, guys. It was awesome chatting to you. Next up, we'll be talking about Borderlands 2. Lee, you have a favourable impression, I assume?
I think it's pretty fancy. Yeah.
But
I will elaborate on that.
Yes.
It gets a pretty fancy out of 10.
Yes.
We heard Predestined Fate by Soulai, and before that, Beatmatic with The Way of the Voice. Jody, where did you pull those from?
Soulai is from PPP PPP, which is the soundtrack to indie game VVVVVV, which is needlessly confusing, but it's a good game. Beatmatic's track is composed entirely of samples from Skyrim. He's put an entire album you can listen to on SoundCloud made entirely of Skyrim samples, although a lot of it doesn't sound like it. He's taken all that great orchestral music and turned it into really glitchy, chippy-sounding stuff.
Wow, that's awesome.
That does sound really cool. Is there any mention of arrows to the knee in it?
Fortunately, no.
I think yes.
He's as sick of that as everyone else. Although yeah. I did see a great mod, which essentially has lightning fly down from the sky and kill every single guard who says that. It's just like an arrow to the... every single time that happens.
That is awesome. All right, Lee, you've been playing Borderlands 2.
That I have, yes. Borderlands 2 came out, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago? Something like yep. that. On the PC, the Xbox 360, and the PlayStation 3. Mm. It's a sequel to Borderlands, which, when that came out, I was not super enthused by. It's a first-person shooter that kind of incorporates a lot of that, you know, killing hordes of enemies and gathering lots of loot stuff that Diablo does particularly well. And it's a difficult mix to get right. You know, you want to have a look at games that also thought that you could cross Diablo with a first-person shooter and make a hit. You look at Hellgate London, and you can't anymore because that game was so bad it killed the company that put it out. And several other companies that followed that one. So Borderlands 1, I think, was successful just because they got a reasonably fun thing out of the end product. But I think that there was something tedious about it, about its gameplay. And I think that this one does a lot to smooth over those aspects. So it's a first-person shooter. It has this neat kind of cel-shaded sort of art style, lots of visible pencil lines but visible brush strokes. It's set in a post-apocalyptic futuristic planet. It's kind of a sci-fi western, and you play as one of four classes of people who are sent to this planet to dig up the mysterious contents of a vault. And what makes this game interesting and unique is the way that it has approached its gunplay. And, you know, if video games, you know, are all about fetishizing guns, then Borderlands, and in particular Borderlands 2, is like the massive Burning Man effigy in the middle of the desert, surrounded by thousands and thousands of drugged up worshippers, because this is crazy dedication to the idea. The best feature of this game is the fact that they have, you know, the loot that you pick up every 12 seconds. There's a new gun that pops out of someone, and this has been generated, you know, procedurally out of, you know, hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of different components, and with different abilities attached to each one. So, you know, you could kill a guy and get a revolver that shoots lightning bullets and that never runs out of ammunition, or, you know, some kind of sniper rifle that sets people on fire, a rocket launcher that, when it runs out of ammunition, you don't reload it, you hurl the thing and it explodes like a grenade, and a new one teleports into your hands. So there's a lot of weird variation there, and I think that they are particularly successful in making every game, every gun you find, cool looking and fun to interact with. So what Borderlands gets right, gets really, really right, is the player side of the equation that is shooting a man in a video game. Every gun looks cool, moves in an interesting way, reloads, you know, has lots of little fun little mechanical components that will jigger around while you're firing it. It feels great to shoot these guns. What I think doesn't quite work is the actual end result of this, the shooting itself. It gets a bit tedious. It gets a bit mind-numbing and prolonged. But Ray, you and I were playing last night together.
Yep.
Because this is what this game is really all about, is being able to play this game with friends and go through shooting hordes of dudes, picking up loot and stuff. Tell me about your experience.
Well, it was the first time I'd actually attempted the multiplayer.
Yeah.
Now, I have a fairly low-level character, and I joined your game.
Yep.
So I think I was underleveled by like 3 or 4 levels.
Yes.
So I died a lot.
You did.
And dying a lot, isn't that fun?
No.
But the times that we were like teaming up together, like when we were in that car and I was the gunner and you were the driver and we were like killing other cars and, you know, the boss battles, they were really fun.
Yeah.
They were really awesome.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a lot of really, really great ideas here. And when everything starts to work, it all, you know, it feels really great. Yeah, you're right. Any time where you and I, where our actions were synced up in a fun way, it was really, really great. You know, there are vehicles in this game, and the vehicles have 2 seats. Someone drives, someone hops in the turret, and that is just delicious fun, as it has been since, you know, Halo and before Halo made Jeeps popular. But there's a weird pacing issue with the game that I think we noticed it happens in two different ways. When you die repeatedly because of an overwhelming threat and because of respawning enemies and because there's just never enough ammunition, the game has this awful stop-start feel to it. And it also slows down because, as I was saying, there's a great thing where every gun is unique and interesting and fun, but every 12 seconds a new gun will fly out of something and you have to then run over to it, have a look at it, see how its stats match up against the guns that you have, and then maybe you've got enough space in your inventory for it, and then you've got to shift your inventory around.
Inventory Tetris.
Yeah.
That was always not fun.
No, it's never fun to look at arrows and numbers and then see if you've got enough space for something in a game that is all about killing men who are coming at you with knives.
But then all of a sudden you'll get that awesome gun that is just super awesome.
That is very true.
And you'll feel really good because you've got that gun and people will be jealous of you.
Yes. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, what's the trade-off here, you know? Because it is a game where people... I was reading a thing where someone was saying that it could be potentially possible for someone to have a terrible experience the whole way through the game because the guns being entirely randomized, they could have 10 plus hours of this and never find a fun gun. Everything that they find is ill-suited for them. And I have, you know, a character who I didn't really enjoy playing for a good 3 or 4 hours until, you know, the perfect gun dropped and then everything was great again. So I guess... I don't know whether they've really tweaked this, you know, the flow properly with the way that loot drops. Like in something like, you know, Diablo or Torchlight, you know, loot drops constantly, but it seems a lot easier to just be able to, you know, pick it up, look at it, right click, you're done, you're moving on. But in this game, you have to stop and sort through everything. It really does break down the flow, and first person shooters ultimately do come down to that you know, that ability to tie those actions together into something that has a, you know, a rhythm to it, a cohesive whole.
Yeah, you don't want to have to stop and look at a spreadsheet in the middle of shooting a bunch of guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, like it keeps stopping you in the middle of the fun so that you can you know, compare your figures against last year's figures.
And then fill out the forms in triplicate.
Yeah. But like it's also, that said, you know, when everything works, it is a ridiculous amount of fun, and it is an incredibly stylish game. The art is magnificent. I think the writing is a lot sharper and a lot funnier than the previous one.
Yeah, I actually laughed a few times.
Yeah.
I've seen videos on YouTube of a character called Tiny Tina who seems hilarious. All of her dialogue that I've seen is hysterical. That made me want to play the game more than anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of really fun characters that you get to interact with. Probably not as much as I'd like. I mean, they're all just quest givers, but everyone is generally pretty clever. The adorable robot character Claptrap is just so self-deprecating and so depressed, but he's programmed to only have an upbeat way of delivering his lines. And he mentions that very early on, and it changes the whole tone of his interaction. There's a lot of fun characters within the game. So I think, look, it's good, and if you're willing to deal with the stop-start nature of it, and if you've got people to play with, yeah, you'll have a lot of fun. You know, it really is, you know, of the games that have dealt with shooting guns that have come out this year that have been good, this and Max Payne 3 are really, you know, pushing this idea in interesting ways. So, look, check it out if you like shooters, because there's nothing really else on the horizon at the moment.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm just starting the game, so I might offer my impressions later on in the month.
Very good.
Yeah. But that's all the time we have for this episode of Zed Games. Thank you very much for listening. Big thanks to Megan Anthony from Screwtape Studios. And we'll catch you next week. And this last track, Lee.
This is Short Change Hero by The Heavy, and it's used in the opening title sequence from Borderlands 2.